Greetings from the front lines of the assault on sobriety.
This is Chuck. That's what he wants to be called. He's a San Francisco pot dealer.
Welcome to the war on drugs.
But we're going to make him sound like this.
I'm happy to report that drugs is winning.
Maybe more like this.
You're tuned to WNYC, bourgeois assimilationists.
Okay, the point is we've agreed to change this guy's voice, and here's where we've settled.
Hi, we're helping keeping people stoned on a Friday in New York City. Oh, there's my phone ringing.
Chuck came to New York from California to sell weed because here in New York, where his trade is 100% illegal, he can make more money. He spends pretty much every day dealing what he calls farm-to-table marijuana. Right now, we're in his dim New York apartment, waiting to get started.
What do I need? What else do I need?
To get ready, we step into the bedroom.
This is it. A pile of clothes, a pile of weed, a bed to sleep on.
He puts the pile of weed into a backpack, and we head to the subway.
Hey, before we go, can you tell me how much you're carrying?
I don't know, but I'm going to guess 6 ounces.
50 or so generously filled 8-ounce plastic baggies. Each goes for around $60, so that's about $3,000 worth. If police could nail him for selling just what he has on him right now, he could go to prison. On the way down to the subway platform, we pass right by a cop.
I just stroll past nonchalantly.
This danger of being caught and jailed, Chuck is choosing this risk. He left a state where he could have sold marijuana in a storefront and came to a state where he has to deal under the table. In this case, literally, right here in a downtown diner, one of our first stops, he passes a baggie under the table to a client who folds his cash into the pages of a book and passes it back. Welcome to the contradictory-seeming economics of the nation's fast-changing marijuana laws. The rise of medical marijuana in California is, strangely enough, what drove Chuck to New York. And here's why. Since the state of California made medical marijuana legal 17 years ago, hundreds of dispensaries have opened up. They're basically pharmacies that sell weed. And Chuck could join them and spend his days behind a cash register, but for all that work, he would make less money. Plus, that's not really him. Chuck sees himself as a counterculture guy.
I knew at an early age I was going to hang out with the freaks. All I had to do was find them.
He stopped smoking a long time ago, but he kept dealing.
And now, you know, it's like I've been on the far side of the law for so long, it would be absolutely insane to actually cross back over the line.
The problem is, with the rise of the dispensaries, illegal dealers like Chuck, they lose customers. Too much competition. And it's competition with a serious edge. Not only can the dispensaries advertise and operate in broad daylight, their customers don't have to break the law every time they score. And in California, almost anyone can get a prescription.
People who retail weed the old-fashioned way, like myself, I saw my business falling off. So my idea was, okay, why not move to New York, where I would probably have success?
Chuck said, I'll buy in California, and I'll sell it to New Yorkers. A good plan, because New Yorkers will pay $60 or more for an 1/8 ounce of the stuff he sells, compared to 45 or much less in California. But then came the next challenge, how to get the weed from California to New York, how to get it past people like Special Agent Roy Georgie. I usually catch Georgie on his cell, driving through the foothills of the Sierras with the radio on.
Can you hear the music?
Georgie is with the California Department of Justice, and he and the other guys on his task force spend their time trying to catch and arrest illegal growers and dealers.
The money, Marianne. We're actually arresting people that are shipping it all over the country.
One easy place to look, the FedEx or UPS in, say, Humboldt or Mendocino counties, California's pot country. Georgie and his guys will stop by and sort through all the outgoing packages, looking for marijuana.
And we'll spend 1 hour out there and identify 30 parcels.
And that's looking at how many parcels total?
I don't know the exact percentage, but about one out of every 15 going by is usually a good one.
That's amazing.
And it is. It really is. You know, they're sitting on so much product in our northern state that it's a billion-dollar industry plus.
What are all the ways that people get marijuana from California across the country?
One is by horseback. No, I'm kidding you.
I would believe it. The list is so long. Large loads in tractor trailers.
Motorhomes, U-Hauls, horse trailers.
Personal planes, airlines.
You're going to have trains and buses.
Just in suitcases on the buses and trains?
Suitcases, duffel bags, carry-on bags.
And the couriers are of all types.
They'll recruit, you know, moms and whoever. Normal John citizen. He'll offload it, get his $3,000-$4,000 for taking a bus ride. And what do you think he's going to do? Hey, I'll do it again. It's easy. I got to put the phone down for 1 second. Hold on. Well, it's a winding
road. California weed has been flowing east for decades. What's new, Georgie says, is all the would-be medical marijuana heading out of state. It's what Georgie calls the white boy ranch grows. Thousands of small pot farmers with permits to grow legally for themselves and the dispensaries, but who still choose to sell on the black market. The same economic forces that drove Chuck out of California are driving growers to ship their crops east as well.
That's a whole other side now, and that's where the eastern states are getting impacted.
Think about it. Marijuana farmers up in Humboldt County could sell to dispensaries with full permission from the state of California, and Georgie wouldn't bother them.
There's probably thousands and thousands of patients that, you know, marijuana works for them. Eases the pain or gives them more of an appetite, and I'm very, very supportive of that. But we see the abuse side of it.
So it's even people who are just saying they're growing it for themselves who are shipping it out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. A good portion of them.
Because California's weed economy isn't as lucrative as it used to be. Basically, with the rise of medical marijuana came a rush of pot farmers. With the rush of pot farmers came a glut of supply. And with the glut of supply, wholesale prices plummeted. Some growers haven't been able to unload all their crops at the price they want on the local legal market. So why not send it out of state to where it's less a commodity and more of a brand with clout?
Right now, Northern California Bud, that trademark, that stamp, is really some of the best in the world.
I should smell this stuff.
We're back with Chuck, and he opens a supposedly smell-proof bag.
It's very pungent.
Yes, it is.
Really super citrusy.
With customers, Chuck can talk about marijuana like it's a fine California wine.
Tangerine.
When he pours out the contents of his backpack to reveal the broad range of flavors that marijuana dispensaries have helped to popularize, his clients are wowed. A new strain called Girl Scout Cookies tastes like cotton candy. Or an older favorite, AK-47. Hard-hitting and floral.
It's all from California.
He's even got medical marijuana chocolate bars and candies.
This is an example of the uneasy coexistence of the medical market and the black market. I can't keep enough of them in stock, really.
The combination of Chuck's old-school authenticity and boutique product, not to mention his dependable service, it's an alluring package to the class of New Yorkers he serves. At some of the Manhattan workplaces Chuck delivers to, people walk in on the deal, see his stash, hear him talk, and become clients on the spot. One guy asks, "Are you a delivery service?" Chuck explains he's more of a mom-and-pop shop.
That's even better, man. I'd love to become a client.
Chuck's move to New York, his wager on a city with no marijuana dispensaries but a taste for California's finest, so far it's paying off. He says he's quadrupled his income since he moved here. And there's one more reason Chuck's business is doing so well. It's because the people who are working to stop him are at the same time giving his business a boost.
I may lose you. I'm going over some mountains here.
That's okay. You're loud and clear now. Special Agent Roy Georgie is now on his way back from a remote part of the mountains where he was lying quietly in a creek, spying on a couple farmers planting marijuana on public land. So that's what you were doing this morning?
Yeah, kind of a miserable cold morning, but well worth it. We got some great footage.
What did you see?
We had three Hispanic gentlemen. Two are wearing camouflage.
Georgie and his task force, they work night and day to catch anyone growing or selling marijuana underground, whether it's Mexicans growing on public land, Asians growing hydroponically, or the white boy ranchers selling would-be medicine on the black market. But all that work Georgie and law enforcement across the country do to catch the bad guys, to disrupt the illegal flow of marijuana, if they don't manage to find Chuck, they're actually helping him. Because the harder they work to stop him, the riskier it is to do his job. And that means Chuck has fewer competitors. He can charge higher prices. Here he is counting a fat wad of bills.
Sorry about this. In white Protestant culture, it's considered to be gauche to flash giant wads of money in front of guests, but we'll just do it anyway.
There is one more advantage of working in an illegal market. The competitors Chuck does have are kind of hard for his customers to find.
There's plenty of weed in New York. There is just an illusion of scarcity, which is part of what I'm capitalizing on. Because this is a black market business, there's insufficient information for customers.
In economics, it's called information asymmetry. If weed were legal, Chuck's customers could comparison shop. They could look at menus and price lists and choose their vendor. As it is, once they find Chuck, they're likely to stick with him. So, Special Agent Roy Georgie and Chuck. On the surface, they're enemies. But in a way, these two guys can't succeed without each other. Georgie is in some small part inflating Chuck's profits. Chuck, he's helping to keep Georgie employed. Why do you do what you do?
Wow. I think it's really the overall love for the job. You're doing what you're believing is good for society. If we weren't aggressive and working the level we were working, it would spread from what's going on in Mexico up into California. It's very self-rewarding. It really is. It kind of becomes your high.
Can I call you then? Okay, if every law enforcement agent across the country were as aggressive as Georgie and his guys, if they could check every tractor trailer, every Greyhound bus, every suitcase and cardboard box, Chuck would be out of business. But as things stand, there's just enough law enforcement to weed out the competition and not enough to scare Chuck away.
How much law enforcement effort do you think there is to discover a guy like you?
I'm going to guess the law enforcement priorities that I'm not near the top.
Chuck makes dealing weed look so easy. Before I leave him to finish his deliveries on his own, he takes a risk he says he rarely does. He's about to meet up with a couple regular customers, but he can't figure out where to do the deal. So he just does it right there on the street, in plain view. They squat down on the low rail around a tree. A neighboring building super puts out the recycling and watches suspiciously from a few feet away.
You all right?
And Chuck walks away with $400 more. That's what he's here for.
All right, bye.
For WNYC, I'm Marianne McCune.